St. Matthew and St. Mark tell us about a second multiplication of loaves, which is what we have in this text. The numbers are different, 7,000, not 12, 5,000, and so forth. 4,000, rather. Seven baskets, not 12 baskets. And it's another example of our Lord's generosity. And also, he's prophesying how he is going to take care of his people until the end of the world. He's going to feed them. But he's going to feed them on his own body and blood. And he's predicting that already in this text. And in the former one, which took place at Passover. What I think we should reflect on a bit is this text. The author, the inspired author, has not been saying anything. He's just been recounting this story of progressive sin. It started with Solomon. Solomon, his heart was not totally with the Lord. His wives talked him into worshiping their gods. So his heart was not pure and wholehearted anymore. That made him inconsiderate and power hungry and building things and surprising for himself, using his great wisdom to care for himself. That made the people angry. That inspired Jeroboam to think of going off. And then a prophet told Jeroboam, he took his brand new cloak, cut it into 12 pieces, said, here, take 10. The Lord gives you 10 tribes. He's going to give David, that is Solomon, you know, his son, his tribe of Judah and one other, Benjamin. And the others will go with you. So then he fled because Solomon was still alive and Rehoboam could have killed him. And he came back. So now we have division in the people. We have idolatry. And now I'm at least not single-heartedness on the part of Solomon. And now it reaches its high point or low point. Religion has become politics, which it often does. If I let them go back to Jerusalem, they'll stay there. They'll worship in that nice big temple that Solomon built. And then their hearts will be won over to Rehoboam, and he'll kill me, and that'll be the end. So now religion becomes the servant of politics. And this automatically means idolatry. And he acts it out. He makes two golden calves. And now we're wondering, you remember the story of the golden calf at Exodus? Both of them are called, I think the word is here, but they don't translate it exactly, the great sin. Ha-hatach ha-gedolah, the great sin. In this language, the great sin is adultery. And so now the people, you see, were adulterous in regard to God and who is giving Moses the law. And they're at the bottom saying about this golden calf, this is the God who took you out of Egypt. Now, how can we be so stupid? It doesn't take much. It doesn't take much that we can be idolatrous, especially when politics is the driving force. Then religion becomes the servant of politics, which it always is in the pagan world. We're talking now about worshiping the one true God. You know, religion in the pagan world is to provide the right balance between all the forces that are out there, the gods and the demons, to make sure everything goes well. That's what religion is for the good of the state. Morality, that's the field of philosophy. This can happen so easily. But religion becomes a political function. I'll let you work on the rest of that. But here, we've hit now the worst. Here is, it started with Solomon, and now we have a divided nation, and now we have idolatry. And the king, Jeroboam, the self-appointed king, you see, getting his people to stay home and not go down because they got nicer songs, better ceremonies, more incense, better preaching, who knows what. So they stay, and that is idolatry. You worship God, and that's all you worship. And the fun and games and the songs and ceremonies have nothing to do with it. When they come from a pure heart, they are beautiful. But when they don't, they're on the way to politics. He appointed priests who were not from the tribe of Levi against the will of God. So what happened? As I told you the other day, then the Assyrians came, conquered the whole northern kingdom, transported all the leaders up to Babylon, up to Assyria, brought in people to take their place. The people brought in would be hated by the local people, right? So they would be fanatically loyal to Assyria, who's protecting them. And those are, as time goes on, the Samaritans. Now Jesus comes, and he's going to talk to a woman from Samaria. He sits down at a well. If you look in the Old Testament, whenever you have this scene, a man sitting at a well, it's marriage. Moses and Zipporah, the servant and Rebekah, this is marriage. So he's sitting at a well. And a Samaritan woman comes along. And he proposes to her marriage. Not just to her, to the whole nation. She says, I have no husband. He said, that's right. You've got five. You've had five. It's very clear in the book of Kings, in chapter 2 Kings 2:17, 2 Kings 17, that when these people came, they brought their gods. They brought five gods, two with their consorts. So there's seven technically, but there's five. Jesus says, you've had five husbands. Now come back to me. And Jesus offers to the northern kingdom to be restored. That's why when the disciples come, and they're all upset, you're talking to a woman. You know, in that culture, you just don't do that. I remember once, I have to watch my time, but a friend and I, we took the bus out to a little town called Taibe, because there was an intact first century house. And we wanted to study this first century house, being archaeologically minded, if you will. So we took the bus out to this little town, but just at that time, the Jewish people were trying to take over about as much land as they could from the Palestinians. So we got off the bus. We're obviously not Palestinians. And there were two young girls waiting over there as the bus would go around to pick them up and take them home. Sort of wherever they wanted to go. And they were glaring at us. Oh, the anger in their eyes. And I looked at them. Now remember, you never speak to a woman in public, a strange woman, ever. And I said, you know, this can't go on. So I said to her, Marhaba. It literally means may you have wide open spaces. I was trying to say, we're not looking for your land. You know, we just came to see this house. Marhaba. Well, the pretty polite answer is, Marhabtain, may you have doubly wide open spaces. So I said, Marhaba. And she said, Marhabtain. That's all there was to the conversation. But it was in Samaria. Well, on the way to Samaria. That's what our Lord has done, you see. But now look, those 10 tribes are lost. I told you this the other day. In Jewish tradition, there can be no messianic era, there can be no restoration of the world without the restoration of the 10 tribes. And Jesus knows that. So part of his mission was to restore the 10 tribes. Well, did he succeed? That's why you have, as I pointed out before, in the book of Revelation, in chapter 7, from the tribe of Aser, 144,000. From the tribe of Reuben, 144,000. From the tribe of Gad, 144,000. There are the 10 tribes. By the blood of the Lamb, they are in heaven, restored and glorious. But it took the death of the Son of God. But you can see this rhythm. Infidelity, politics instead of religion, idolatry, disappearance. How hard we have to work to keep our own hearts pure, our own practice of faith pure.